You are listening to a digitally remastered class of Rav Yochanan Zweig, Rosh HaYeshiva of the Talmudic University of Florida. This class is from the Robert L. and Rhoda Lipton Foundation Audio Library. For more information, please call 305-534-7050, or you can visit our website at www.talmudicu.edu.
Let's turn to the end of the Parsha, page 263. Okay, we have the Parsha of Amalek, our obligation to wage a jihad against Amalek. Zohar, we have to remember Esasher Osu L'cho Amalek, what Amalek did to us, Baderech, on the road B'tseischem in Mitzrayim when we left Egypt. Asher Korcho Baderech V'ezani V'chol Konech Sholem Achrecho, they beat up all your stragglers, V'ato Oyev V'yogeya, and you, when you were tired and weary, V'lo Yorei Elokim, and Amalek had no fear of God. And then sentence 19, it shall be when Hashem brings you to rest from all your enemies that surround you, and the land that Hashem gives you as an inheritance, destroy all memory of Amalek under the heaven, lo sishkach, do not forget. That was a very difficult thing here. We have an obligation to eradicate the entire nation of Amalek. After the Second World War, the Nuremberg trials, the judgment at Nuremberg, was predicated on the premise that their argument was we were following orders, and the answer to that was those orders were ultra-virus. They went beyond the scope of a country to be able to order its soldiers or its subjects to do a crime. What was the name of that crime? There's a crime against humanity called genocide. And it was such a compelling thing that really you cannot create ex post facto crimes. Even under international law, you can't make a crime after the fact, make it a crime. The answer is that it's such a basic understanding that the extermination of a race is a crime, that therefore when your country tells you to eradicate a people, they're telling you to do something that you should have understood is criminal behavior. Not that the crime was invented after the Second World War. Genocide is a crime against humanity. That has to be the base of the judgment. We talked in the past, I think there's better things to court, and from other chazal, there's better reasons to reach that the conclusion of punishing the Germans, nothing to do with that, but that's the secular court's the decision to punish and sentence to death the organizers of the Nazi Party was because of and of the war against the Jews, because genocide is a crime against humanity, and a crime against humanity a state cannot tell you to do, and you don't have to follow the orders of a state when they tell you to do a crime against humanity. That's the basis. Is not Hashem telling us to do exactly the same thing? Extermination of Amalek is genocide. You're wiping out an entire people. Why? How could the Torah here legitimize not only saying you're allowed to, it's a mitzvah in the Torah to do genocide? Yeah, it's limited genocide, doesn't mean all of humanity, but it's taking and eradicating an entire country. And I thought this is a very troublesome question. And whenever secular reasoning tells you something that sounds, makes a lot of sense, and the world considers it makes a lot of sense, it's a very good starting point to try and understand the Torah. Because the Torah tells us exactly the opposite, it has to be some very compelling insight here that we're missing. That's the premise of my question. That's what I'd like to talk about this morning. How can it be that there's an obligation to eradicate an entire nation when everybody knows the eradication of a nation is genocide? And genocide is a crime against humanity, and it's a crime that every single solitary human being should know and understand that a state has no right to ask them to do genocide. Well, one thing we could say here, and it's something interesting, I mean, maybe this itself is certainly maybe enough of an answer. According to the Rambam, we might have an answer that follows like this. The Rambam tells us that there's no obligation to destroy a Molech. Even though it's one of the 613 mitzvahs, there's no obligation to destroy a Molech. Before we wage war against a Molech, what we have to do is find out if a Molech is willing to accept the seven Noahide laws and be at peace with us. And the Rambam tells us we did not go to a war against Amalek, even against Amalek, until they refused to be Koreh Sholem with us. They did not wish to enter into a peaceful coexistence with us, Sholem. And therefore, according to the Rambam, the Torah never actually mandated genocide. Once a people refuses to do that, that's something else. The nation refuses to do that, then we had to destroy them. But we gave them the option, which means, according to the Rambam, it's very interesting. The destruction against Amalek is not to destroy the people, it's to destroy the evil of Amalek. And if they are willing to peacefully coexist with people and act in a moral way, then we have no obligation to destroy them. Okay, I think that's an adequate answer according to the Rambam. But actually, the Rambam is not the majority opinion there. At least there are certainly those that disagree with the Rambam. Says that every other war in the world that was, the Jews never went to a war, Milchemes Mitzvah, against the Canaanites and the seven nations occupying the land of Israel until they actually proffered a peace treaty. However, the Ravid says that's by all the nations except Amalek. Which means, according to the Ravid, we've now reinstated that question. According to the Ravid, Amalek is not given this option. Amalek, one does not have to be Koreh Sholem. And if one does not have to proffer treaty or offer peace, then we're back to the question, the Torah, according to the Ravid, has mandated genocide. That's a very, I think it's an extremely difficult question. Two sub-questions to this is, Rashi points out on page 263, we have a law that's right before Amalek. Rashi is in sentence 17, in 263. Remember what Amalek did to you. So Rashi says the Torah juxtaposes before the laws regarding waging war against the Amalek, that a Jew has to have truthful measures and weights. We have to have real measures and weights. You're not allowed to have in a society that people have false weights. In fact, the Rambam writes in the Laws of Sanhedrin that there was an obligation from last week's parsha that we have to establish a judicial system. And Shoytrum, we have to have people to enforce it. The Rambam translates the enforcers of the judicial system, a very interesting Rambam, are people appointed by the judiciary to go around and examine weights and measures and the price gouging. And if that's not done, they punish them. It means in the infrastructure of the Jewish legal system, there's a legal system for people that do criminal acts, that they're brought to court, and up front, preventive, there's a appointment of people that go around to make sure there's no weights and measures are in standard. It's very interesting. That's, next year, if we do Parsha Shoftim, I'll discuss that. It's interesting. In the secular world, that's not a function of the judiciary. Under the Torah law, it's a function of judiciary. It's a different discussion. But anyway, that's what he tells us. The weights and measures are a very important point, to the extent that we appoint people to go around to make sure that weights and measures. Why is this juxtaposed on Moloch? So here, take a look at the Rashi. If you are untruthful regarding weights and measures, then you're going to be get punished by a Moloch. Very interesting. What is exactly the relationship between this sin and a Moloch waging war against us? There's a lot of other sins in the, that Jews do, or that anybody does. Yet weights and measures has some direct correlation to that sin brings about a Moloch. Before that, we have one other mitzvah that also has a relationship seemingly to a Moloch. In page 255, we have the laws of... On 250, remember what HaKadosh Baruch Hu did to Miriam, the punishment for Lashon Hara. And the reason I know that's connected to Amalek, because who is to us the paradigm of Amalek? Haman. Haman, the Gemara says, nobody was as competent in speaking Lashon Hara as Haman. It's very interesting. We have Lashon Hara, we have weights and measures, and then we have Amalek. What exactly, one of them, the Rashi points out, the Torah tells us one precipitates the other, and the fact that Lashon Hara has a connection to Amalek, we know that from Haman. If Haman was the Amalek figure, and Haman was the world-class Lashon Hara, there must be some type of connection. And the first question we started with, how does the Torah justify this notion of genocide? I'd like to begin. There's a lot of probably implications or ramifications for our present life as well. Let's go to the sentences regarding of Amalek in page 263. Remember what Amalek did to you on the road as you were leaving Egypt. Sentence 18, Asher Korcha Baderech. So Rashi says, what does it mean, Asher Korcha? The word Korcha has a lot of meanings in Hebrew. Korcha comes from Mikra, what happened to you on the road. The other word, Kar, means cold. Asher Korcha Baderech, they cooled you off, chilled you, Rashi says. The word, about four lines down the Rashi in 18, the word korcha expresses cold and heat. Amalek chilled you and cooled you off from your boiling heat, that the nations were afraid to fight with you when we came out of the Red Sea, and we had this reputation that God does all these miraculous things for us and kills our enemies. Everybody was afraid of us, which we say in Oz Yashir every day. All the nations of the world were tremendously in fear of us. Comes along Amalek, that we're not in fright, and they came and attacked us. And then Rashi says, this can be compared to a boiling hot bath that was too hot for anybody to get in, to jump into. So a scoundrel came along, and he jumped in, and even though he was scalded, he cooled it off for others. Rashi's telling us a fascinating thing here regarding a Amalek. A Amalek jumped in knowing they would be destroyed, but what was their purpose? That our hotshot reputation to the world, who is now in tremendous awe and fear of the Jewish people after the splitting of the Red Sea, the world would no longer be afraid with them. Because once they've engaged in war, and to some extent, Amalek had some success, because without the fact that God made an additional miracle, Moses raising his hands. When his hands went down, Amalek overcame them. The reputation of invincibility of the Jewish people went down. And that's what Amalek's motivation was, even though they were going to be destroyed. It's a huge insight here into Amalek. What kind of person in their right mind jumps into something knowing they're going to be destroyed in order to take down somebody else's reputation? Which means Amalek is self-destructive. They're willing to destroy you, not destroy you, they're willing to cool you off and destroy themselves. A person who jumps in and scalded dies, and the water is cooled. They lowered our reputation, but they actually destroyed themselves. Where does this... Well, we understand it's self-destruction, but where does this ability or lack of self-worth come from? Amalek is a descendant of Esau. There's a very interesting historical fact about Amalek. We view here Amalek as the worst of all the nations. There's no other nation, according to anybody, that we have some obligation to destroy. We have no obligation. The only one we have to destroy is Amalek. Where did Amalek come from? Esav had a son by the name of Eliphaz. He also had a daughter-in-law by the name of Timnah. Eliphaz married Timnah, and they had this child, Amalek. As we go through the history in the Torah, of Eliphaz and Timnah, we find out that these were the two greatest descendants for good of Esau. Why do I say that? Eliphaz was told by his father Esau to kill Jacob, and he didn't kill him. He took his money and reported back to his father that he actually had killed him. And they told his father a lie. He went back and said, "I took his money, that was like killing him." Because he did not wish to actually kill his uncle. Jacob is the uncle of Eliphaz. He didn't want to do that. He'd grown up in the house of Isaac. He didn't want to do that. Who's Timnah? Timnah is a girl on her own who came to convert. She told Avraham Avinu she would like to join, and he pushed her away, she was pushed away. She would have liked to marry one of the descendants, maybe one of Jacob or one of his sons. She was pushed away. And therefore, so, well, if I can't marry Jacob or his son, let me marry a different descendant of Abraham. So who does she marry? Esav had another, was also a descendant, also an Enoch. Eliphaz was also a great-grandson of Esau. Of Avram. And therefore, if anything, this is a very righteous woman who wants to be part of the Jewish people. And what happens? She's rejected, and she marries Esav, and they have a son, Eliphaz. So the two parts of Esav that seem to be have some socially, what's the word, redeeming social value, from them comes the biggest Sonei Yisrael, the biggest antagonist of Israel. I think the Torah is telling us a very interesting insight where self-destructive behavior comes from. How does a person get to be self-destructive? It's interesting. You know when the highest rate of suicides are in the United States?
Holidays.
When you perceive that other people are having fun, that's when you really get depressed. You know, it's one thing, you know, I'm like everybody else. These guys seem to really be enjoying the holidays. That's when I know how empty I feel. It has to be that the self-destructive behavior of Amalek is because they recognize that the Jewish people seem to have a sense of purpose, have a feeling of joy in their sense of purpose, a feeling of existence in their sense of purpose, and therefore that's probably what motivated Timnah to join them. This is the people that have some belief in their in the purpose of man. They have a sense of fulfillment that I want to be part of it. That's a a huge appreciation of the value of being a Jew. Not necessarily the proper total, but she just see these are happy people, or people that have purpose in life, I should say. She wants to join. To some extent, Eliphaz also has this feeling of there's something valuable. He doesn't want to destroy. He doesn't want to destroy Yaakov. And there's something there. I'll make him poor. He won't be able to. He won't be happy with himself. He'll get into why money is. He'll make him suffer, but for what he did to his father. But nevertheless, he appreciates that there's a value. Self-destructive behavior comes out when I feel that somebody else has something in life and I have nothing, and the difference between what they have and what I have makes me feel empty and worthless, and therefore my life has no meaning. That's what I'm proving from the holidays. If I felt my life had no meaning all the time, then the suicide rate wouldn't go up when other people are having a good time. But suicide rate goes up because it emphasizes to me the emptiness of my existence by the fact that other people, someone that's self-destructive means he's not adverse to taking any risks. What is he risking? A self-destructive person, which is exactly here. What's going to happen to me? I'll attack the Jewish people. Worst comes to worst, I'll be destroyed. Who cares? I don't care. There's no risk that I'm not willing to take because I'm willing to destroy myself, right? That's what a self-destructive, that's what Amalek did. They jumped in knowing they were going to be killed. So what? But I can hurt somebody else. It's worth it. It must be that that's not genocide. Anybody, a nation that resents others, the purpose and success of others, and is not adverse to taking any risk to destroy them, is something that has to be eradicated. Because genocide is a crime because every nation has its purpose, and every nation has its raison d'etre and has contribution to make to society. And to take that out is a crime against humanity. And I think the secular world is very correct in that. However, what about a nation that has only one purpose? That's to destroy another nation. That's a nation that actually has no purpose, and has forfeited its right to exist. And even though, we can control it. They can't be controlled. You can only control somebody that's adverse to taking, that there's some risks that they're adverse to taking. But someone that has absolutely not adverse to any taking of any risks is not somebody that you have any means of control over. That means that they remain a constant threat to go ahead to destroy others. Whoever's a constant threat to destroy others and is not adverse to taking any risk and they can't be controlled is a nation that you can destroy. Even if we'll assume, and I think there's certainly a good understanding that makes a lot of sense, that genocide is a crime to destroy a nation, but what about a nation that has its raising the etchers to destroy another nation, and there's no way that that nation can be controlled, you have every right to destroy them. Not only you have a right, you have an obligation to destroy them. They have forfeited their right of existence. And since the nation was only concerned with one thing, the destruction of another nation, no matter that they're willing to destroy themselves, then that's a nation that you have a right to destroy. So according to the Rambam, we said, the answer is that even Amalek you can't destroy, because you can destroy the evil in Amalek, and therefore you have to proffer them some type of treaty and commitment to do the Noahide laws. But the Rambam says you can destroy them. Even though, how do you destroy a people? The answer is, because this is a people that's a negative, they're dangerous, and they can't be controlled. Which is, by the way, that has a lot of relevance today. You know, most nations can be controlled, but a nation that has all type of suicide murderers and absolutely no boundaries in how many will die for that purpose to kill others, there may be a nation or that you should be able to destroy. It's way beyond justice. Because there's no risk. Anybody who can't be controlled is a guy out there with a knife, and there's only one thing to do with it, and then he has to be killed. There's nothing else to do. It must be also a nation that doesn't have any sense of purpose, really. This has a huge relevance today. Feels money has no sense of purpose, too. You know, to some extent, I think all of us are starting to experience the stock market is almost legalized gambling. There is that feeling. It's manipulation. It's, I don't know how to do it. I wish I did. But it's like manipulation. It's creating artificial PR. And you control the wealth of almost the entire world, which gives a feeling that money is not a real thing. That's what false weights are, too. False weights are, and measures, means that money is not a real thing. The manipulation of prices, the manipulation of money is also based on the same thing. It's not real. There's no purpose. It's just a game, and there's no real meaning. And therefore, if we engage in that, that means we have some amolek in us too. Anybody who starts thinking that money has no purpose, that God didn't give us money so that we can do what has to be done, the good things that has to be done with money, but money is a way of measuring ourselves, and we understand that money really is not an accurate measure, because money itself is a game that you can play and that you can manipulate, and therefore there's no real value to money. The step right after that is there's no value to life. And therefore the nation who, us, when we get into that manipulation of money, which is what false weights and measures are. We're manipulating money. We're giving an appearance that has this value, and it doesn't have that value. Then we are actually one step away from a Molech, and therefore God is bringing a Molech against us. I was thinking maybe in conclusion, that's really what the whole idea of Lashon Hara is also. Lashon Hara is also somebody that has no feeling of purpose in life, and their only sense of purpose in life is, and they're bothered by your seeming accomplishments. You have some meaning to your life, you have some type of accomplishments, and therefore what are we driven to do? I have to destroy you. I have to go ahead and destroy your reputation. I have to go ahead and destroy the things you've accomplished, because I can't live with the fact that you look like you're doing something with your life, you're accomplishing something in your life. I feel inadequate in my accomplishments. I take the fastest way to get rid of my sense of inadequacy, and what I do is I destroy your accomplishments. I start stories and rumors, and you know, to the extent that I find some shortcomings, it's even better, because there's no defense against that. I can make up stories, but that's never good, because you can be out a lie. You know, you can out a lie. After a while, it could not be true. But if you have some type of foible or something you did wrong, or you made a mistake, whether it's a girl in Argentina or it's some other type of mistake you made, or you took some type of money, I want to publicize that, because by bringing you down, I start feeling good about myself, because your seeming success is such a pain in me, that the only way I can alleviate that pain is by harming you. That's what Lashon Hara is, and that's why, that's another thing that Amalek means they feel no self-worth, no self-esteem, and the only way of dealing with that is getting rid of those who seem like they do have a feeling of purpose and self-esteem. And therefore, it's incumbent on us, certainly not to engage in a Amalek type of behavior, but more than that, if we don't engage and Amalek is there, we have an obligation to destroy Amalek, because that type of influence in the world is such a negative influence. And it can't be controlled, because there's nothing that they're not, there's no risk that they won't take, there's no harm that they won't inflict, no matter what's going to happen to them, they have to be destroyed. But you can actually forfeit your right to be part of the brotherhood of man. When you're interested only in pulling somebody else down and destroying them, and there's no other way to control, you know, most people you control, you create consequences, negative consequences. That's a way of controlling somebody. Jail or some other type of punishment or threat, negative, but if someone who negative consequences is not a deterrent, so you have no option but destroying them. So, yeah, it's true. The destruction of a nation is a terrible thing, and it's a crime against humanity. But a person can lose their right to participate in humanity when their whole focus is the destruction of humanity, or destruction even of another nation. I mean, we're living through this today. We're definitely living through this today. You know, there are those out there that they have no... There's nothing, almost, it seems like there's nothing that they, or certainly worried, there's nothing that they won't risk to destroy the Jewish people. That's a nation that has forfeited its right to exist. So as long as we think that they're afraid of something that can deter them, of course you're not going to kill somebody if you can stop them by having a threat. But what about if he's so self-destructive they don't care about any kind of threat? And up front they know that that's what's going to happen. We have no option but to destroy them. That's what I think. And the problem is we have to ourselves be extremely strong to make sure we don't slip into the Amalek mode, because the only way that a person isn't going to get this self-destructive is they feel life has a purpose, that I have to accomplish with my life, I have to do something, if I have money, I have to do good things with my money. But if once I start losing that perspective, then I myself one iota, a wisp from slipping into an Amalek mode. And therefore Amalek comes, God always sends an enemy that mirrors our problems. And if we are start that money means nothing to us, it's a game, it doesn't have a purpose, and Lashon Hara means that we don't feel a strong sense of purpose and we're bothered by somebody else's accomplishments instead of myself trying to make accomplishments, all I want to do is tear you down, but I don't want to build myself up, we're one step away from becoming the same way. We have to constantly work on finding value, meaning, and purpose in our lives. And if we don't, the only thing we're going to do is sit back, be angry. You know, how many people we know are cynical? You know, especially as they get older, they're cynical, they didn't make it, they went to the best schools, and at the end of the day they got third-rate jobs, and they never really got the recognition they think they deserve, and they didn't accomplish what they become cynical, and they're there just cutting everybody up, and they've lost their sense of purpose in life. That's a very dangerous thing for all of us. We have to constantly be reminded that, or constantly focus on, we're here for purpose. There's meaning to life, there's real accomplishments in life, and we focus on having those accomplishments instead of sitting down and looking at what other people are doing to heighten my feeling of inadequacy. That's Amalek as a nation, and all of us have those type of tendencies also, and therefore the Torah is very strong in making sure that everything we do, or we focus on doing things to keeping up a standard of ethical, moral behavior, because that gives a person a sense of purpose. Two more things. One of the things here, the Torah says, when Hashem, look at sentence 19 on 264, when Hashem brings us to rest from all our enemies, we should destroy Amalek. What do you mean? If he brings us to rest from all our enemies, who are all our enemies? That's what it says. It should say from our enemies. What do you mean from all our enemies? How could Hashem bring us to rest from all our enemies and then tell us to destroy Amalek? So I say, the word here is oyev, enemy. Amalek is not an oyev of the Jewish people. Amalek is a sone of the Jewish people. An oyev means somebody, an enemy means somebody who admires what I've done, my business accomplishments, my technological advances, and you know what they want? They want it. They want to take over my assets. And Hashem has, we've overcome all of them. At that point, Timcha destroy Amalek. Amalek is not an enemy. Amalek is not somebody who wants to take our assets over, not somebody who wants to take our accomplishments over. They just want to destroy us. That's a sone. All our enemies are, we can overcome. A sone who has no purpose, no enemy, no redeeming value, he has only one thing, he wants to destroy you. The Torah is telling us that Amalek is the sone of the Jewish people as opposed to the Oyev. And by the way, anybody who's an Oyev who wants something is a person who's adverse to taking risks. There's something, if you want something in life and you have some, you're not going to, you'll take risks up to a certain point because you're looking for something. A sone means somebody who's already wants nothing, he has no purpose, and his only purpose is to destroy me. That's a sone. That's a tough thing. We, in fact, we have also some taint of sinas chinam. We also have, we're not totally clean of that ourselves. We do have some taint of sometimes not wanting what you have. You know what it is? Anybody remember in law school, near final, you had to watch your books. I had the worst handwriting in the world. That anybody who would have stole my book would have got nothing. My notes were worth nothing. I couldn't read them myself. You know what? It's not about taking mine. It's about making sure I don't do it.
Why wasn't Amalek destroyed on the battlefield?
Hashem kept Amalek there. We actually, it's actually a very good question. Rashi says in Parshas B'Shalach that we destroyed. Moshe, you'll bring three more for Binyan?
Huh?
Three more. Yes. Israel. Yeah, Israel.
Mm-hmm.
Huh? Yeah. Yeah. And Israel and Shlomo. Rashi says over there, very interesting thing. Rashi says that Yeshua destroyed he left over the weak ones of Amalek. Destroy the stronger, he said, destroyed the weak. That was Al-Pi Adibur. Hashem said to leave over. So it's not that we didn't have the ability to destroy them. God said leave over, and I think is God wanted to give us a reminder that there's the fact that you know there's people out there to destroy you gives you a motivation to make sure that you don't fall into that trap. There's a model of a person that to us has to become the example of how not to become. And he tried to reduce the harm they could do by leaving over the weak ones. But you know, Hitler, if that's leaving over the weak ones,
when they made peace, they offered the 7 nullified laws and coexistence. What about Chuba?
No. No. They weren't judging the people or punishing them. They were just trying to maintain that we should be able to exist with them. It's not our job to get them to become better, but we have to make sure we can live together with them.
What about Chuba for what they did to the Jewish people?
No. Nothing. Which means we weren't out to get a pound of flesh. You know, and a lot of times, it's the same thing in today's negotiations. We have to do makeup. Let's rehear what it is.